Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today's guest is Elia Winters. Elia writes geeky, kinky, cozy, erotic romance. In this interview, we chat about her writing process, her latest book, Purpurine Curves, and of course, a round of book recommendations. Now let's go to an interview. Hi, Elia. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. So I write cozy erotic romance, is how I like to describe myself. Geeky, kinky, cozy erotic romance. I'm a huge nerd, and I love all various geeky things, from the sciences to all different games and shows. I'm also a huge nerd about sex, which is part of why I write what I write. I'm a sex toy reviewer. And in my other life, I also teach high school under a different name, and I bake bread and do all kinds of crafts.
I love it. So I'm assuming you have baked a lot of bread during the pandemic.
So much bread. I'm one of those millions of people who started a sourdough starter back in March and have been carefully cultivating my bread baking skills. My family has eaten all they can, and now I'm giving it out to my whole condo complex.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah, I started sourdough starter, and it was a fail. So I was like, not for me.
They're very picky.
Yeah, they're finicky. It's like very, there were no bubbles, or I was like, okay, I guess it's just not for me. So I envy those who are able to do a sourdough starter and bake some sourdough during the pandemic. So what inspired you to become a writer?
I think I've always been a writer in some form or another. I started writing when I was very young, just as a way to explore my own imagination. And when I got older, started writing really terrible novels as a teenager, like Star Wars fan fiction. And this was in the days before the internet, so I didn't know fan fiction was a thing. I was just writing these movie tie-in novels that were truly dreadful. But like all things, when it's dreadful for long enough, eventually you get good. So I started writing better things, work of more quality and understanding narrative. I wrote and read in all different genres. But one of the things I kept coming back to is I'm good at writing sex. And I used to write these little short snippets of these incredibly filthy scenes. And they would make the rounds to all my friend group at my Catholic high school. And somehow I never got caught. But as I kept writing, even though I enjoyed romance, I hadn't really written a lot of romance. And so I started to focus my craft in that, I think I can do this really well. And as I started reading more romance purposefully and started writing it, I realized that it aligned very nicely with my feminist sensibilities, with my sex positivity, and found that it was a really fun genre. So I've been writing novels for most of my life, and pretty good ones for a little while now, I think.
Well, I really love your novel, so you have been doing good.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. So what was your journey to get that first book published?
So my first published book was purely professional, and I actually wrote that book for my 10-year anniversary with National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo.
Yeah.
And I've been nanoing since the first year it went national in 2001. And I wrote, again, a lot of terrible books. And by the time I wrote Purely Professional, I was actually querying a different book to agents. It was high fantasy. And every book makes you a better writer. And so as I was writing this different book, I said, I'm going to write this book to indulge all the things I'm interested in. It is just for me. It's going to be just delightfully filthy and kinky. And I realized that it was definitely the best thing I had written so far. Mm. And so I stopped querying the other book. And I realized that as much as I might love that other book, it was just not very good. Craft-wise, narrative-wise, it wasn't where I needed it to be. And so I thought, if I query this other book, do I want to make a career out of erotic romance? Like, is this a genre that I really want to dig into? What does it mean for my identity? Like, I'll need to develop a pseudonym. I need to, like, value my privacy. Mm-hmm. And I got some input from close friends of mine who said, you've got to query this book. And so I did. And I only queried one agent who was my first choice agent, who I had never queried before because the genres weren't right. But I had been following her on social media, and that was Sarita Hernandez. And she's the only one I sent the book to. And she wrote back in 2 weeks from the query and said, send me the whole manuscript. And I did. And 6 weeks later, she called and offered representation, which I took. And so I was just suddenly swept into this whole world that I hadn't expected, because I had spent my whole writing life wanting to get an agent. Mm-hmm. And not really realizing that that's the start in traditional publishing. It's not the end. So all of a sudden I felt like I'd achieved this great thing, and I'm really thrilled. And she was like, all right, now it begins. You need all of these, like, we're going to do edits. We're going to get you a platform. You're going to set up a website. And suddenly I was thrust into this whole world of publishing. But I was pleased that Purely Professional was really well received. It was a Rita finalist for Best Erotic Romance and Best First Book. And it's been just a whirlwind of different stuff from there.
Love it. And so talk to us about Purely Professional. What was the book about?
So Purely Professional is BDSM erotic romance. Ooh. And the premise is that there's this woman, Bridget, and she has volunteered to write an article for this magazine that she's an editor and a writer for. And she's going to write this article on BDSM because it's this new hot thing. Mm-hmm. And she's sort of talking out of her ass, trying to impress her new editor. And she doesn't know anything about the topic. And she sort of gets accidentally talked into writing this article. Of course, her immensely sexy neighbor just happens to be a dom living very quietly, and they have a mutual friend who knows both of their predicaments and sets them in touch with each other. So he's going to teach her what she needs to know to write this article, and they are going to keep things purely professional. And of course, you know where that goes from there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I gotta pick that one up. I would think for erotica BDSM books, like, you're something to be said. Not because I didn't like 50 Shades of Grey, not to bash it. It was just, like, not for me. But I really love other authors' take on it, and just the whole power structure dynamics that come with it, and yeah, the sensuality and erotica that happens. So.
Yeah, I love power exchange. I'm a kinkster myself, and for all of the issues that I may have personally with the way BDSM is depicted in the 50 Shades trilogy, it did get a lot of people reading the genre, and yep, I can't discount its role as a gateway into reading this kind of literature and just what it's done for the genre in publishing overall.
Yeah, it has opened up. It was like a lot of people that are in a real, I've interviewed quite a few people who start reading romance late in life, and their gateway drug was 50 Shades of Grey. Like, that's what opened up the genre. And yeah, so, you know, it did something good for the genre, and I think I'm grateful for that. I think it's just like, you know, it wasn't for me. I think I needed a few more years of reading other things before I dive into the genre and then just looking at, you know, what romance is all about. So
yeah, I do think that part of the publication of Purely Professional was benefited directly. I wrote the book before 50 Shades was a phenomena.
Really?
And yeah, and just because I'm a kinkster.
Yeah.
And then when I was querying Purely Professional was just when 50 Shades was starting to hit the market and all of a sudden people were acquiring BDSM. So it was like a perfect storm of timing in some ways.
That's fascinating. I love it. All right. So let's talk about your writing. Do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads you? Are you a plotter or are you a pantser?
Ah, so I used to be very much a pantser and now I am a firm plotter.
Okay.
I've done enough pantsing where I've had to rewrite really significant parts of the book. And mm-hmm. even with an outline, one of my recent books, the book that actually won the Rita, Three Way Split, I rewrote that book. I wrote like over 350,000 words of that book to get the 75,000 that it finally ended up being.
Oh my gosh.
And that was even with an outline. Fortunately, not all books are like that. And not all books are dealing with polyamorous relationships, which have really complex narrative arcs.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, my process is that I'll start with brainstorming character and conflict. Who are the people involved in this romance? What do they want separate from this romance? And what do they want from each other? And why can't they be together? And from that, I will sketch out each character's individual arc and use that to draft out a list of scenes where those characters each come to different realizations along their personal journey. And then I interweave those scenes and see which ones are redundant and which ones I can cut. And then that's how I create my outline.
That's really fascinating. I love the idea of looking at conflict of characters and just weaving the different scenes and then seeing what works but doesn't work and before putting pen to paper and starting writing, you know, or going to the computer writing.
Thanks. Yeah, it arose out of having a book that I struggled to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And I had written this whole list of scenes that I thought were great for the book, but I hadn't articulated what purpose the scenes serve in the overall arc. And so I didn't know what needed to happen in them character-wise. And so I sat down and I created a document called Fixin' the Shit and went through and created this process. This was for the book Single Player, which was a male-male erotic romance that finished off my Slices of Pie trilogy. It was a mess until I went down and really nailed out my character arcs and figured out, okay, he needs to come to this realization. What's a scene that would happen that would lead him to this realization? And restructured the whole book that way. And then I thought, oh, this makes a lot of sense. And now that's the process that I try and use for all my books. It doesn't work out that neatly, but it's always nice aspirationally.
So this might be a random question or maybe alignment. What software do you use to write?
I am a huge fan of Scrivener.
Okay.
It is an amazing program. I probably use like 10% of the functionality of Scrivener. But what I love is that it lets me create little separate files for every scene in the book and write out like little descriptions and have keywords and identify who the point of view characters are. And then I can like drag and drop and move them around.
Yep.
So I never was a modular writer
mm-hmm.
before I got Scrivener. And I think the program has actually improved my writing process, which mm-hmm. is not something that I say lightly. I think I'm actually a better writer because of the tool. And I think that a tool is what you make of it. But for me, it's been really helpful.
Yeah, I figure, because I feel like the functionalities that you were talking about wouldn't work with Word. Like, you need a tool that's going to help you kind of like put all the different pieces together and to mix and match and move things around and see where it leads you, as opposed to using a system like Word of just like writing, and then be like, okay, how do I cut this, you know?
So. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And then just navigating easily between different sections of the book. And I also love that there's a section for research and supplemental content. Yeah. So I will have other files within this Scrivener package that are like my character documents and for Hairpin Curves, like a whole map of their road trip. Mm-hmm. And a list of different facts. And sometimes I keep a doc of funny things I've Googled during the process of writing. And that all lives within the Scrivener world. So I'm not clicking out and going into other documents where I can get sucked into distraction.
I love it. Do you share your work along the way, or do you wait to complete a project to read?
I don't share any of my work along the way. I can only get through my drafts at a reasonable rate if I tell myself that no one's going to see it. And I have to hold myself to that. There have been a few exceptions where I've rewritten a scene. And I'm like, oh, this is such a thirsty scene. And one of my friends will say, oh, share it. And I'll send her like just an excerpt of that. But I don't let anyone read the book itself until it goes to either, depending on what process it is, a critique partner or my editor.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about Hairpin Curves. What was the source of inspiration?
So I heard about Karina Adores, which is the line of queer, very trope-filled, like classic romance, but make it queer, that Karina Press was putting out. And Karina Press actually published Purely Professional. They published my first book. So I have a relationship with them. And my agent said, hey, listen, they're doing this line next year. I think you'd be interested. And I'm a bisexual woman and have always wanted to write FF romance. But at the time I got into the trad publishing career, people weren't publishing it. And you could go indie with it. And I do have one of my books that's self-published, and I'll self-publish more in the future. But it was really hard to get trad publishers to acquire FF. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that this line was coming out and that it was Karina Press, who I feel like has done a lot of work pushing for diversity in the industry, I was really excited and I wanted to write for them. And so I don't do a lot deliberately with tropes, but the inherent nature of taking existing romance tropes and queering them subverts the tropes in a way that I thought was really fun. And I love reading tropes. So I thought, what is my catnip book? Like, what do I love reading? I'm like, well, I love reading banter. I love road trips and forced proximity. I love only one bed. I love people traveling. And I thought, well, it's got to be some kind of friends to lovers or enemies to lovers road trip romance. Mm-hmm. So once I had that, then I started sketching out who the characters were. And they actually changed a bit in the drafting process. My original drafts had Megan as a very shy character. And as I started writing it, it wasn't who I wanted her to be. And I wanted that to be how she seemed to others, but that not be her real story. And so it evolved from there. So I looked at what tropes I love and built a book around them, essentially.
I love it. And I love Road Trip. I love Just One Bed. I think I'm marketing this book. Told my friends who find Just One Bed as a catnip, I'm like, you need to read this book. So it is like, it just, it has a tropes that are like catnip to a lot of people. So the force fortunate too. And I have to say, there's not a lot of female romance. And so it was like breath of fresh air, like to see one female romance out there. There's been a few this year, but in the past it hasn't been, traditional publishing hasn't published quite a few of those. So thank you for, you know, contributing to that.
Thanks.
So basically, let's talk about the road trip. How much research did you conduct to get this far right? And have you ever done an epic road trip?
Well, part of why I made this road trip what it is that I grew up doing a big portion of this road trip. So I am from, I was born in Massachusetts, but when I was only about three, we moved as a family to Florida.
Okay.
And so all our family was in Massachusetts, but I grew up in Florida. And every year, once or twice a year, we would do this drive. And my parents didn't fly. So my favorite memories as a kid were this drive and the road trip. And I've done it a couple times as an adult. And I've also separately, I live in Western Massachusetts now, I've done the drive to Quebec a few times. So I put the two of them together because I wanted it to be far enough to be significant. And there's something about going to another country that I find really appealing and that I thought would be enough of a significant draw for the characters to make them interested in going. So I haven't actually been to Nashville, but I've been to basically everywhere else, almost everywhere else on this list, at some point. And there were a few stops in the original drafts that ended up getting cut out for length and for clarity. But it's an interesting drive.
It is. I done the Florida to upstate New York trip. But we didn't get to stop. I think I've done it. We just stopped like really random places. It was fun to see, you know, places I could stop in the future, you know, Massachusetts, you know, if I would go to Quebec, like even the Nashville stop. It's like, it felt like really fun. So.
Thanks. Yeah. A lot of it is, I wanted it to also be places that people could actually go.
Yeah.
One of the stops I did cut was south of the border,
which is,
yeah, it was actually in an original draft, but I felt like I couldn't really delve into the complicated racist history / complex nuance of the origins of south of the border in a way that felt authentic and that didn't feel like I was going to get sued for defamation by the people who own it.
Okay.
But I definitely wrestled with that because I feel like it's an iconic part of the I-95 experience in the Carolinas.
Yeah, it is. It's such a visible stop.
Like
you remember that stop when you do that trip. So.
Oh yeah. And those billboards, there's just hundreds of miles of billboards.
Yeah. So what were some of the favorite spots for you to ride?
I think New York was definitely one of my favorites because it's a place that I go a lot and it's one of my favorite locations. I love all of the northern ones. I loved Salem because I've been to Salem a whole lot. And the balance between the tourism and the authenticity is kind of fun. And there's a little obscure stop out in the Blue Ridge Mountains that I added in part because my family did a stop like that once that always like sticks in my mind, even though it was not part of, like, I don't remember anything else about that trip, but I remember the place we stayed, and for us it was autumn. And seeing foliage like I'd never seen before. I was probably about four or five.
Oh gosh, that's awesome. So you write section tension really well. Megan and Scarlett are frenemies, two lovers. What was the process like to get the relationship from frenemies to actual lovers? Like,
thanks. I'm glad you asked that. That went through an evolution as well. In my early drafts, they were friends and not frenemies. And the I couldn't develop the tension that I wanted to develop. They were already, if they're already coming from a really strong emotional connection, you don't have as much room for the sort of tension that I think you get from conflict. And the road trip itself doesn't provide enough organic conflict. And I didn't want to manufacture it with car troubles or other issues, which I did conceive of in original drafts. So I think part of it is understanding how they each blame the other for the relationship being strained. Mm-hmm. And they have to want things to get better on some level. And I think that plus any sort of physical attraction leads to that kind of tension. It's the tension that arises between anybody who you want something you can't have, that creates tension. When you include forced proximity and physical attraction, then it manifests as sexual tension. So I focused mostly on tension plus attractiveness and let the attraction and let the sexual tension evolve organically out of that. Yeah. It sounds very clinical when I say it that way.
No, but it worked. Like somehow it worked in the relationship. You saw the relationship grow over time. Like you didn't throw just from bed at the first stop. Like it took a while to get there. And I think it took a while for them to get to know each other again and then get to understand where each was coming from, where the relationship was strained, and how they are actually coming together. So I think it worked really well. It was like a rope bit. Like it was just like, will they, won't they? And then, you know, when they're finally okay, they will, you know.
Thanks. I worked really hard on that. So I'm glad it reads that way. I appreciate that.
It does. So what are some of your upcoming projects?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I'm between projects right now, and I can't remember when the last time I could say that is true. So one of the books that's on my list to write is I really want to write, and I'm going to say this into the world, and so then I'm going to have to write it, an FF World War II War Secretary's romance. Ooh. And I have to do a lot of research. And so that's why I haven't written it yet. Because being queer in the World War II era, the experiences varied greatly. First off, between men and women. Queer men had a much harder time than queer women in that time period. But there was obviously a lot of societal pressure. And my characters are, I want them to be able to have community. I don't want the book to be about fears of being outed or about homophobia. Like those aren't things I want to write. Mm-hmm. I want like queer people to have happy stories. Mm-hmm. And that is possible even in historical romance because people develop and establish communities. So I need to do research about what sort of communities existed at that time and how and where before I write this book to feel like I am positive and also fair and not looking at things through a Pollyanna atmosphere, but also not writing a book that's constantly dealing with homophobia as its main conflict. So that's one of them. I also want to write maybe some kinky librarians. That's on the list too. Yes. I want to go back to some BDSM erotic romance because it's a genre I still love and haven't written as much of that I want to. And that might be overlapping with my kinky librarians. We shall see.
I love it. I can't wait for you to write these books.
I'm excited. I don't know what comes next, but that's part of the process for the rest of June is figuring out what comes next.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's really cool. So now let's go to Miranda Book Recommendation. It's an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
Oh, you can't ask me that. I like all, I mean, I love erotic romance. I love historical romance. I actually haven't really written historical romance, although writing a road trip in the age of COVID can be argued in a way as historical romance. But I love historical romance. Beyond romance, I read like everything. When I'm in my writing cave, I don't read a lot of anything, but I read nonfiction. I'm in a YA book group, so I've read some fantastic YA. So a little bit of everything, trying to read more romance, definitely prioritizing more diverse romance on my TBR right now.
So what has been a book that you read this past year that you love?
Oh man, oh gosh, so many. Some of the historical ones that I've really loved. I loved A Duke in Disguise by Kat Sebastian, who I just love. I'm working to read more of her stuff. I read An Affair in Winter by Tess Michaels. I loved that. For FF, I read A Lady's Guide to Celestial Mechanics by Olivia Waite, and that was just beautiful FF historical romance. It was really a slow burn. And as someone who writes high heat erotic romance, like sometimes slow burns can be frustrating, but the world of this book and the characters were so beautiful that I just enjoyed coming back to them. And for some high heat, I also really loved Fire on the Ice by Tamsin Parker, which is FF erotic romance that takes place in like an equivalent of the Olympic Village of these high performing, one's a speed skater and the other is a figure skater, these two women who have this amazing sexual tension and really hot sex throughout the book. So loved those. On a very, very different note, for YA, I just read The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill. That was really beautiful fantasy YA that I just devoured within like 48 hours. I've also read, I loved Rafe, A Buff Male Nanny by Rebecca Weatherspoon. That was so much fun. Really hot characters, smart characters, having great banter and really wonderful sex. So loved that as well.
Okay. Dallas, we're going to find you online.
So I am just all over the social media. My main hub is eliawinters.com, E-L-I-A, winters.com. I'm also really active on Twitter at eliawinters. I have an Instagram, eliawintersauthor, which I haven't been updating as much as I should, but I'm on there. You can find me on Facebook at eliawinters as well.
Thank you, Elia, for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It was really wonderful.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.